Well, I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News Tom, whose name looks like Muller, who is the man who runs the PS Art Space in Fremantle and intimately involved in the forthcoming, in November, Fremantle Biennale. Welcome to the Shipping News, Tom.
Thank you, Michael. Great to be here.
Now, one thing I've always got perturbed about in the course of life is the mispronunciation of people's names, and I suspect on a number of levels I've just mispronounced yours. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how your name is pronounced and spelled, and what sorts of additional things like accents get put into it.
Well, it's Tom Müller in English, Müller in French, and Müller in German. So I'm originally Swiss, from Basel, and I grew up in the Swiss-French part. And therefore, the name took a bit more of a French flavour, as I explained before to you. Came out here in 92 with my mother, who had lost her husband then, and she was keen to travel the world, explore new horizons. We had mutual friends here, and she travelled around the whole nation and thought that Perth might be the most fitting capital for us to come to. I was 17 when I arrived. I didn't want to leave my hometown. I was very embedded. I was, in full puberty, and so that's how we came to be here, essentially.
Well, it's tough, I think, everyone knows, for teenagers to move town, and to be a 17-year-old and to move town would be really, really tough. Did it take a lot of adjusting?
It took a couple of years. I mean, we had some English language experience. My grandmother's from Puerto Rico in the Caribbean, so she spoke Spanish and English to us when we grew up. So all that English we had actually assimilated back then had to be unlearned and relearned. All the nuances and subtleties of this particular sand groper accent had to be reassembled. I think, you know, I did year 12 here in Guildford. That really helped in integrating into the society. But it took me at least a couple of years to feel I could find my feet.
Well, here you are today. We won't say exactly how many years later, but you're embedded in the arts scene, particularly in Fremantle. As I said at the outset, here we are in PS Art Space. Can you just remind all of our listeners what this is, where it came from, what it does?
So PS Art Space started in 1992 as an artist-run art studios. It's gone through many iterations, many different management systems. In 2012, the current owner approached me and was keen to reinvigorate the space with a new model, a new vision, a new spirit, and I was really excited, and I saw this as an extension of my particular artistic practice. So came in, we diversified the community of artists. We had essentially a lot of community painters. I invited photographers, I invited film studios, architects, landscape architects, and contemporary practitioners in order to build a bit more of a cultural hub. Additionally, we designed and put in a coffee shop downstairs. We needed something to kind of fuel all these creative thoughts. And over time, we developed a model that made it financially viable for us to keep existing without being dependent on public funding. So we have functions, we have conferences. Our kind of combined studio hire model enables us to, you know, I guess, make a living, essentially. So it's a dynamic model that's independent, and which at the same time allows us to create some interesting programming downstairs. So we're not needing funds to enable activity downstairs. We can be, I guess, more cutting edge in our decision making. And PS Art Space has grown to become a kind of a testing ground in some ways, a platform for contemporary culture to manifest itself, often in response to the building's makeup. This is an old turn of the Federation style warehouse, 1905, typical kind of ex-wool store building. So in the main gallery downstairs, you'll see these 22 quite imposing pillars. So it's a requirement, and it's a brief that each artist receives. They have to somehow integrate and marry that into their manifestations of how they're going to respond to the site.
Well, I've found on occasions when I've been both to rock performances as well as other art exhibitions, they're good to lean on, those pillars.
They are indeed. It's more than just a pillar. In fact, you know, it's funny you should say that, Michael. We had three practitioners over the years that have utilised the pillars as the main object to make their sculpture intervention, including Jennifer Kornberger and Horst Kornberger, with 22 pillars, who designed a whole theatrical piece and who actually attached a poet to each pillar who was describing particular experiences around Fremantle. Matthew Thorley is another sculptor that created a sleeve around each pillar and made them all individually lean. So we really welcome artists that engage the building in all its glory.
It made me feel very nervous, as I have a legal background, that if Shakespeare were doing that, he'd probably tie a bunch of lawyers to each pillar and people would kill them off. Although it was badly misquoted, I think. But there's an exhibition on down there at the moment, downstairs, with the pillars, that makes your point. Can you briefly explain what that is?
Hmm. So Jessica Eva is the current artist showing Women in Red, and she's very cleverly utilised the negative space, or the void, between the pillars to actually install her suspended photographs. It's a series of works that looks at a community of women in Lucknow in India called the Red Brigades, and it's a celebration of the work they have done over there, and that she's been documenting the whole journey and how these women have come and bandied together and empowered themselves in response to the very strong patriarchal values that Lucknow actually has. So, yeah.
Now, let's talk about you. You were invited to come down here and make the latest iteration, if you like, of PS Artspace work. What was your own artistic, creative background before you came here?
Well, originally I started as a graffiti artist many, many years ago, and I went to art school to prove to the rest of the world that graffiti art was a legitimate art form in its own right. And having gone to art school and other institutions, I obviously changed that whole approach. And I became a painter for many years. And then I kind of graduated migrated into sculpture, and finally I'm still a very active installation artist. So I work with situations, sites. I collaborate extensively. I'm a big believer in collaborations. And I've just returned recently from a large work in Sydney at Carriage Works as part of the National, which is a large group survey of Australian artists. So I work with fog, I work with light, I work with people, performances, histories and mythologies. It's a very vast, it's a theatre of life, the cinema of the everyday, I call it.
I'm bound to ask, do you burn cars or burn houses as part of your intervention?
Look, I've burned a few things before. It's more fog or smoke without fire, so it's the kind of metaphorical meaning that lies behind that. It's usually about reawakening our history. It's about delving into a former occupation of sites. It's about interviewing people and what they used to do in a particular site. So can we capture all of that in one particular moment, and can we share that moment with a public, with an audience that can somehow delve back into the past with a contemporary touch?
Now, it's sometimes said that the late Alan Bond was responsible for the red dingo on that silo out near North Fremantle. Do we find some graffiti art of Tom Miller anywhere?
There isn't much. I think there is a few bits and bobs down at the powerhouse in South Fremantle and at the old wool stores next to the train station. But it's mainly just on paper. All the graffiti I do is my kids at home now on paper. No more spraying on the walls.
So do you hang off trains to paint the side of them or underneath bridges?
I have done. So I was a very active and prolific graffiti writer. We had a crew called 296 back then, and we travelled extensively throughout Europe, and we painted many trains, many trucks, even ships. And it was really exciting. It was like a little special operation troop, collecting, organising, getting our drawings ready, and then not being caught. So, yes, I've done many years of that, and that's behind me now, but exhilarating times.
Well, a related question, Tom, for you is this. You have a very nice hairstyle at the moment, but at the height of your graffiti career, what style was your hair?
I think I had a number of different haircuts. One was number one, shaved, and others were kind of just, pubescent hairstyles anywhere and everywhere. It wasn't really my main concern at the time.
I can imagine someone like you at that stage being a resident in Berlin with the sorts of wonderful art society that exists there.
Exactly. Very much so. It was all about the way you style, the way you engage. So hip-hop back then was very much a different manifestation of what we understand as American hip-hop. It was very much to do with breakdancing, was to do with communities. It was very understated and subdued. So I look back very fondly upon these times, actually. And you know what? To this day, I maintain very strong relations. All of us from that particular crew are still working in cultural spheres, and we still get together every now and again to activate what was then in a new kind of way.
Now, there's something happening soon in Fremantle, as I indicated at the beginning, in November, the Fremantle Biennale. Now, you're the artistic director.
That's cool.
And tell us a little bit about how that came into being and what it's going to offer Fremantle and indeed the Perth metropolitan area and people no doubt from interstate.
So in 2017, I approached my colleagues, Rick Spencer at the Fremantle Arts Centre, Corinne Van Hall, the public art coordinator from the city, and Pete Stone, the recently appointed manager of culture and the arts, and pitched this idea of let's go outside our cultural spaces, let's go into the streets, let's engage with Fremantle's myriad urban fabric, including the waterfront, the West End, etc. And that's how it started. So very kindly, Pete, Corinne and Rick indulged my idea, and we developed the whole concept over 12 months. We applied for federal and state funding. We approached the University of Notre Dame to be a major player, because really it's going to benefit their West End activation. And that's how the whole seed was germinated. And I guess our first edition of the Fremantle Biennale, High Tide 17, you might remember, was sort of heralded or headlined by Felice Verini's yellow ellipses, Arc d'Ellipse.
Love them.
They're great, weren't they? And that sort of really showed that Fremantle is capable of having a renewed reading of itself. We wanted to work with the buildings, the urban fabric, the histories, people's interaction with it. And what the Fremantle Biennale really essentially is trying to do is to give people a new look, a new insight into the city that they either are from or they come and visit for the day, and to bring high-end international caliber artists to work with our local community of artists, with the national following, and to create a bit of a melting pot of ideas. And really, the main premise, the main theme is to be site responsive. So there's a conversation between someone's practice and a particular site that we've allocated them to. And that conversation happens over 12 months to 2 years. And out of that conversation, a work is then created in the hope that the audience will get a new insight into a particular work or location.
Take the PS art space down here, and the point you made earlier about it lends itself, or people have to adapt to that space. What performances are we likely to see there?
At the Biennale?
Yes.
We're going to see a number of different iterations, including Lawrence English's Standing Wave, which would be more of a sound installation. So Lawrence will create a new sound work that is going to respond to the inner volume of the HAMS Ovens, the submarine next to the Maritime Museum. And the audience will be invited to go through on a sound voyage, an audio journey for about 30 minutes, through a series of oscillating speakers and sound devices. The idea is to simulate what a deep-sea diving descent might be like through sound alone. So there are a number of different performances. Some are more traditional by having a big light show in the Esplanade Park. Others will be a bit more progressive and engaging. We'll have Soundmarks by Ryan Birch and Jennifer Garland at the Shipwrecks Museum, which will take us through a series of sound markers, a bit like landmarks, but they're called soundmarks. Pre-America's Cup, post-America's Cup, now and into the future, and trying to map out Fremantle through a connection of coded sounds.
Now tell us about what will happen at the Esplanade Park.
We're very excited to welcome Studio Rosengard from the Netherlands. He and his team will be headlining this year's Undercurrent program. So that work is called Waterlicht, and it's a large-scale light show that involves special fog machines, humidifiers, and technical kind of lasers, essentially simulating what rising water levels will look like in years to come. So the audience is invited to walk beneath this very large membrane of liquid simulated through light and get a sense of what it was like before the park was itself sits on reclaimed land, what it might be look like in the future. So it's a poetic interpretation. And augmented by that soundscape, we'll have an audio component, with Barry Maguire, local elder, who will tell us about this particular location, his story, and other local historians and migrants that will give us a maybe deeper connection to place and site that we may not have been acquainted to before.
Well, that sounds fantastic, and I know Barry is fantastic too. Now, will that be an event open to the public?
Absolutely. It's a free event, and it's going to kick off our festival this year. So it's on the 1st, 2nd and 3rd of November between 7 p.m. and midnight. So it's free for all. You don't need to be an expert in any contemporary culture. Kids, families and any age are welcome. And it's really about an experience of walking underneath this big installation and to absorb the energy, absorb the qualities and maybe reflect upon why you're here today and why you're in Fremantle.
Well, there's been a lot of attention very recently on ABC News, The Guardian, I think a number of media outlets, and you don't have to have that to tell you that the sea is coming to join us. Port Beach here has been largely eroded. So it'll be a very timely message.
Absolutely.
Now, you've touched on what art does or what it's about. I'm not sure how to put this question precisely, but why do we have these sorts of festivals? Are they just for the benefit of the poorly paid and often unpaid performers, or is there something else about it all?
Well, I think traditionally you're right, art was quite selective and looked at a very kind of recluse part of society, but I think our role as artists in this day and age is to bring art back into the general public, into the main audiences, and art has the capacity to question, to disrupt our thinking, to enable different point of views. And it also has the capacity to innovate. Through creativity, you can change the way you think about particular ideas or themes, and often not empirical, because they're interpretation and poetic, they allow you to expand your mind and to maybe take in a different point of view about a situation or a moment in time. So I think the arts will see a lot more glorification, a lot more celebration of the arts in the future, because art today has a very clear and defined purpose. It's not just about someone indulging in their own particular research about a material or an idea. It's really about connecting to community and connecting to site. Where do we live? Where are we heading? How are we getting there? And maybe art can give you an insight into that. And I think the idea of disruption is key. Disruption in a positive and sometimes negative way.
Now, just thinking more generally about Fremantle and the community here, what's your take on where we've come from, where we're at, where we're going? Are there other things that you would like to see happen in Fremantle? And I add to that, there are people in business who want to see more business activity here. There are the people who want the heritage of Fremantle, the built heritage, maintained very much as it is. There's been this creative community which has been established since at least the 70s, if not before. Are we on some sort of continuum? Can you see where we're going? Do you have some dream of your own?
Well, first of all, I'm a huge fan of Fremantle. I'm very fond of this place. So I think we have all the right ingredients to make an even better city. I mean, I'm very happy with how things are, to be honest. I think the fine balance of all the different communities that live and operate here is so particularly wonderful and exciting. If we continue to celebrate the place we live in, if we continue to work together, respecting heritage, respecting culture, respecting businesses, I think it's really about bringing that whole organism into a fine equilibrium. And I think communication, to keep engaging with each other, not to create these sort of siloed entities, that's going to be key to really putting Fremantle on the map how it should be. So, I mean, I have great hope, great aspiration, and I think that if we continue to engage with one another, Fremantle will become, you know, maybe not anymore the world's best-kept secret, but more people can benefit from this place.
There is some advantage in not being overdeveloped and being a bit of a secret, I suppose, for those of us who live here. Have you thought about how we can, and there's an assumption in this question, better integrate the port and the structures down there with this historic part of Fremantle? Is there an artistic opportunity to link that place with where we are right now at the PS Art Space?
Well, we are doing that, I think, already. We've engaged as port over the last 4 years. Traditionally, they're a very closed entity. we all love the port. The port sort of, you know, kind of fashions the kind of facade of Fremantle. So I guess some of the works we are commissioning, such as Lawrence English's work, Bennett Miller's The Red, the Southmore Resort and others, are all working directly with the port. And I guess these artistic activations are going to link the port with other parts of Fremantle. So it's about getting the port excited, but them becoming a key player and a key participant in the Biennale. I mean, that's what I'm bringing to this particular place. So I think through cultural activation, it's a bit like a passport for everyone to belong to one republic for a while. We have been working with the crane operators, Patrick and DP World, to create this ballet mécanique. So we're still working on that, where we could celebrate our iconic gantry cranes and for them to be undertaking sort of some sort of a synchronized dance every Sunday. We'd love to bring the port into this place a bit more and to create more synergy between both. So I can see it changing, and they've been very forthcoming. The port is, in fact, one of the key supporters as well of this Biennale. So I think over time and through more conversation and through more enabling, this can happen.
What you've just explained is exciting. Those cranes, sometimes referred to as giraffes, and everyone's got their own explanation or description of them. That would be something to see, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it? I think the idea is to have every Sunday, when shipping or vessel movement is low, to have a break for half an hour, and if all the six or eight cranes would come together, and a bit like in Churchill's passing, all the cranes would bow, come up and come down, maybe augmented by music, maybe with a bit of lighting. We would love to bring in, celebrate the infrastructure of Fremantle. We want to bring in new works in. Let's use what's there.
Mm. Well, that is really exciting. Now, when this Biennale is over, hate to even posit that thought, given it's all happening and no doubt with all of its sort of mechanics, what happens immediately after it? Do you start planning for the next one?
We debrief. We kind of roll through the whole thing and we kind of expand and deconstruct, and we get some surveys out there. We talk to the community, how they received the whole experience, and we start seeding the forthcoming Biennale in 2021, absolutely. I think it all becomes ingredients to then create a different plan of attack. But first, we'll have a break for 6 months and to spend some more time with my family and my kids. But we definitely look at a plan for the forthcoming one. And, you know, these things take years in the making. Funding, reaching out to artists, actually attracting key artists can take up to 3 or 4 years sometimes. So, yes, we're already looking at the forthcoming one at the moment.
Yes. And you then get yourself on the map. You then attract those great performers, in a sense, and you bring them here.
Absolutely. Having had a precedence with both Felice Barini and now Dan Rosengard, who are very high-end practitioners, it gives us enough currency and credibility to attract new artists in the future, yes.
Now, as to the Piers art space itself, are there other creative plans, things that are in the pipeline?
Look, I think the space has reached a moment in time where it's very viable. I think we're just going to keep on doing programming and keep this community alive. We offer subsidised studio spaces, so we're keen to retain a community of artists and keep working here at very, very affordable rents, and for them to be engaged in a conversation in the artistic programming downstairs. So I think the model works. We're at full capacity in terms of our tenancy, so if it ain't broke, there's no point fixing it, really, so we're happy to keep going. But who knows what the future will hold. Maybe this space will see a new manifestation in years to come, and maybe we'll turn into a wellness centre or apartments. Who knows? But at this point in time, I think everything is rolling along nicely.
When you hear a politician say it could turn into a wellness centre or apartments, you assume it's about to happen next week.
No, it isn't. It's a reality we're all aware of, I think, sometimes. There's been lots of demand for it, but the owner is great. She's committed to retain this as a cultural centre, and it's wonderful to see committed landlords that have that sort of mission in their life. So we're very privileged.
People who come to Fremantle or have lived here for a long time and love it just wanted to retain those characteristics that attracted them in the first place, and I'm sure that's the same here. But what about you personally, your own artistic work? This is obviously all of these activities have drawn you away from that, I'm assuming.
Yes and no. As I said earlier, it's an extension of my practice. You know, I see the curation side of thing as a way of enabling others, and I'm very happy to do that. I mentioned earlier I came back from a big show in Sydney, and I've got something at the Art Gallery of Western Australia in February next year, so a large exhibition of my work. So I think
that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's exciting. Thank you very much. So I think it's a bit of both, a bit of give and take, and it's wonderful to be at the receiving and at the giving end of the stick, and I'll keep doing that, I hope. If it's a sustainable model, I'll keep it alive as long as I can.
Oh, well done. Now, when I've been researching a little bit about you, did I discover you were once living in New York City?
I was there for a brief stint, yes. I was working for the Russian installation artist Ilya Kabakov, a very illustrious conceptual artist from the 50s. I was a leading hand installation manager in his studios in Long Island, so I was there for 3 months. It was a great experience to be in the midst of it and to see how these people work 24/7. And it was a great learning curve for me, yes. Mm. I was there for a short while.
Mm. So does Fremantle have anything to that resonates, if you like, with Manhattan or Brooklyn or Long Island, for that matter?
Port Authority. Port Authority in New York, Port Authority down here. I guess, you know, the kind of the neighbourhoods, the spirit of Brooklyn, Fremantle has a bit of that, the idea of sort of smaller communities. And I guess I'm more of a village type person anyway. I like smaller places where people know each other, and I think, you know, that's why I'm kind of here in many ways. We've got a very strong community at school with our families and kids, and it's like a large family. I mean, it's very exciting. It's a very special place, and I've lived in many places in my life, and I've never come to a place quite like Fremantle. So I'm very grateful to it and to the people here.
Is there any one thing you'd like to see happen in or around Fremantle? Some sort of pet ambition you have for the city?
For it to become the capital of Western Australia, potentially. Free parking.
Free parking, you think?
Free parking. No, look, more bicycle paths. I mean, look, it's all happening. No, I mean, Fremantle is a work in progress constantly. And I think that's the exciting part about it, that we are shaping it and making it as we live in this place. You can affect change, which is exciting, which you can't maybe do so much in bigger cities. So I like it the way it is. I think it's great. You know, even though I'm meant to change, I'm very happy with how Fremantle is changing and reflecting the spirit of change.
One thing most people in Fremantle are waiting to see the final outcome of is the King Square development. Have you been keeping an eye on that?
I have, absolutely, and I'm currently pitching for an artwork as well there, so I'm excited to see what King Square can do. Can that new civic heart transform the whole kind of business landscape of this place? So I think there's great impetus and there's great momentum happening there around the whole precinct, and I think it's going to benefit the community at large. So yes, I celebrate and I laud it and look forward to what kind of legacy it's going to have.
Once upon a time, the West End, I'm thinking back to when I was a teenager and young adult, late 60s and into the 70s, the West End was the place. That's where the restaurants were. That's where the nightlife was, really, before the Cappuccino Strip got going. You mentioned earlier that the Biennale has this sort of West End connection as well. What's it doing? Is it just taking advantage of that particular built environment? Or is it trying to do something else on behalf of the West End?
I think the West End, it's the most interesting part of Fremantle because of its history, because of its community. So I think initially High Tide was really responding to the heritage fabric of Fremantle, which is obviously located almost exclusively in the West End. But, you know, I think we are looking at different locations. I mean, we're working more with the waterfront, the port section this year. And in the future, we might be looking at North Fremantle, we might be looking at the area near East Street Jetty. So we're not fixed or particularly bound to this place, but this is by far the most picturesque and postcard place. It was a good way to kind of launch our initial Biennale. But I think Fremantle has the capacity to change and to move with its time. And I think if the West End doesn't remain a museum town, if we have to keep everything historical, that's key to Fremantle. I'm absolutely convinced of that. But we can bring contemporary and progressive thought and responses into it to then generate new opportunities and new ideas for the future.
Well, Tom, thank you very much for speaking to the Shipping News today. Before we go, give me two things. The website for BS Artspace, as well as the Biennale.
Thank you for having me, Michael. So the website is psas.com.au for PS Artspace, and the Fremantle Biennale website is fremantlebiennale.com.au, and on there you'll find the whole program called Undercurrent, and we look forward to seeing you on November 1st.
Thank you very much. It's going to be a great time. Thank you very much, Tom.
Thank you, Michael.